Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, July 26th. And Blake Griffin, how good was he? How good is he? And how good will he be? This is your boy Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and the Associated Press, Pistons follower my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for making us part of your summer routine. And today we are talking Blake Griffin, past, present, and future. For the past, we'll be visiting an interesting question and argument posed on Twitter on Wednesday by Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press. For the present, we'll be analyzing his chances of being an Eastern Conference All-Star next year as the changing landscape of the NBA dictates new spots being formed, new openings and new closings for All-Star spots for the projections this season. And in the future, we'll be talking about what kind of player we foresee for Blake Griffin down the road as he lives out the rest of his huge contract with the Detroit Pistons. Give us a follow, by the way, on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also, the Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons, aptly named. You can find that very easy. It is July. It is late July, so we are kind of in the thick of things as far as the summer, lack of news, a lack of easy things to talk about. And there was actually some Pistons news on Wednesday, though, and that is that the Pistons have announced the signing of rookie Khyree Thomas to his rookie deal, the second-round pick out of Creighton, picked 36 by the Pistons after the trade with the Philadelphia 76ers. We're here about 6 hours after the news broke on the Pistons' Twitter feed, and I haven't seen any of the writers tackling it yet as I tape this after the team announced it. That Keith Smith of Real GM on Twitter says it's a multi-year contract, so that's all the information I'll be able to dig up about that. But that means that the Pistons' roster is set at 15, and just one two-way spot is available, although Reggie Hearn did tell Vince Ellis during summer league that, according to a tweet from Vince, the Pistons still hold his two-way rights, according to him. So maybe that carries over until otherwise noted. So maybe the Pistons still can make a decision on him going forward. Not really sure about that, and I don't know the ins and outs of the mechanisms with the two-way deals, if they are kind of one-year deals in and of themselves, or if they're kind of pretty much he's a two-way player until otherwise specified, if he has to be released out of that before the Pistons go ahead and make a decision on what they're going to do with that second two-way deal between the Pistons and the Grand Rapids Drive. But basically, we're all done with the offseason transaction-wise, unless something unexpected happens, and that's good news and bad because we don't have to sit on Twitter and wait for big news to happen. But on the other hand, we still got to do our podcast for the next 6 weeks, and we will get through it and come up with some very interesting stuff, by the way. But it's sometimes bad for this podcast and sometimes bad for NBA Twitter as a whole, by the way. That's part of why maybe we should all take a month off of Twitter during this time instead. We're having weird arguments instead. I'm seeing a lot of Brandon Ingram versus Jaylen Brown or Kyle Kuzma versus OG Anunoby. Just arguments that everyone just kind of retreats to their corner, and really they're pretty awful. But one of those types of, you know, arguments that I just called awful that we'll talk about here on this podcast, because I actually thought it was pretty interesting and a pretty good one. After Kevin Love signed the long extension on Monday with the Cleveland Cavaliers, NBA Twitter kind of went in with many calling it the new biggest and worst long-term contract in the league, replacing Blake Griffin's deal with that dubious title. That conversation kind of morphed on Tuesday on Twitter, on Wednesday on Twitter, turning into a who's better debate between Kevin Love and Blake Griffin. That was an even better question framed by Vince Ellis of the Freep, who took it a step further and said, who was better in the primes of their careers between the two, as obviously both are dealing with injuries over the past few years and are maybe not quite the player they were at their 24 and 25 ages that they are as they look at 30 in the face right now. There's ridiculousness on both sides of the debate, but Vince made the best point when he said that if you don't think it's pretty close, then you probably have a pretty bad opinion on one of these guys. You're downplaying one of them big time if you think that one of them is clearly better than the other. But anyway, let's talk about it. First, using some of the stats that have been thrown out there in response to this query, the counting numbers in their 2013 and 14 season, which were pretty clearly their best 2 years. Kevin Love scored 2 more points and had 3 more rebounds per game, and also half of an assist more per game the defenses, it's hard, you know, as I've talked about in this podcast before, I'm not a big advanced stats guy when it comes to defenses. I just don't think that they're out there right now. There's too many factors that take into account what's good defense and what's bad defense. But, you know, we can all agree that Kevin Love and Blake Griffin are both below average defensive players, and you're not really going to win an argument talking about defense if you're defending either of these guys. True shooting percentages were just about equal for these guys. A big stat, obviously, that the Clippers won 57 games that year and the T-Wolves won just 40 games, under 500, didn't make the playoffs. Now you can take into account that Blake Griffin was playing with much better teammates than Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan, while Kevin Love was playing with guys like Ricky Rubio, Kevin Martin, and Nikola Pekovic, who, by the way, was pretty good and just kind of fell off a cliff and disappeared out of the league a couple years later. But using usage percentages, those guys, it was very similar between those guys. 3 points higher on the PER for Kevin Love. The rebounding percentages were higher for Kevin Love as well. But Griffin was playing with DeAndre Jordan, so obviously the need to rebound wasn't as big for him. You got VORP and WinShares numbers on Basketball Reference, and those are more baseball numbers with value over replacement player and WinShares. Those were slanted towards Love as well. But efficiency type of numbers went a little bit more towards Griffin, and that makes sense when you're playing with a guy like Chris Paul, whereas the value over replacement player and usage numbers maybe being a little bit higher for Kevin Love make a lot of sense when you're talking about a guy who has to carry a little bit more of the load for his team. That being said, can't find enough advanced stats out there to make up the difference in the team's success, which I would side with Vince on there. It's an argument that's kind of been outlawed by the baseball numbers folks because, you know, it's an individual success can't really dictate what a full team of baseball players can do in terms of a win and a loss, only in their small way. But basketball is more of a team game where, yeah, still a team game, but one guy can dictate how much success the team has a lot more than you can in basketball. And I think it does mean something that Minnesota wasn't able to put winning seasons together when they had Kevin Love, despite the fact that he was putting up all those huge numbers. And that, a couple years later, their team was able to find success. And I know that you could argue that Kevin Love contributed greatly to the success of the Cleveland Cavaliers. But if you watch those games, I don't think Kevin Love was the reason that the Cleveland Cavaliers won that title in 2016 and had all the success they had during the LeBron James era alongside Kevin Love. So I remember that 2013-14 season, and I remember that it was obvious about half a year into it that the MVP race was a two-way one between Kevin Durant and LeBron James. And Durant finished strong and ended up getting his one and only MVP award for as a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder. You the real MVP to his mom. You remember that. And Blake really got in there late in the season. He had a strong finish to the year, solidified himself as a pretty obvious choice for the third place in the MVP rankings there, which he actually received that honor. I mean, yes, it's not really an honor. It's just getting third place in the MVP voting. But he received that that distinction comfortably over Joakim Noah of the Bulls, who was fourth. For the record, I'm on Team Griffin in this argument, but more importantly, I'm on Team acknowledging that this one is pretty close. And I also think it's unfair that people peg him as only being athletic early on in his career and saying that now that's gone and that he's become, you know, an unuseful player in the NBA. If that's what you think, you haven't really been watching him. Obviously, the athleticism has narrowed with the injuries that he's had over time, but he's still a very effective player, a very smart player, and someone who offensively is a huge difference maker in the NBA. When he entered the league as a rookie to that year, which we talked about earlier, 2013-2014, his year four season in the NBA, he made huge strides with the mid-range game, knocking down some free throws, and his ability of ways that he can beat you on the court. He really evolved his game in those first 3 or 4 years. And I think the fact that he was just a jumper and an athletic player, even as a rookie, was probably a little bit overblown. Those were the things that he was most known about around the world, becoming a big-time, you know, celebrity endorser with the cars and all that kind of stuff. But to say that he was just an athletic player really he's out there still scoring 23 points a game for the Clippers last season, despite quote-unquote being not an athlete anymore. So obviously that says something about how good of a basketball player he is. He's up over 5 and 6 assists a game. and really making it happen on the offensive end of the floor in a variety of different ways, despite losing that athleticism that he had, that spark that he had his rookie season with the Los Angeles Clippers. But up next, we're going to talk about Blake Griffin's current state. Is he an all-star in the Eastern Conference this season? But you've heard me talk about advertising, and now that I'm back in Detroit, we're going to be going for it a little bit more. If your company wants to reach that key demo of men between the ages of 18 to 44, provincial Pistons fans that have ties to the Metro Detroit area and an interest in spending their dollars locally, you should be sponsoring this podcast. 98% men, 80% of those between the ages of 18 to 44, all sorts of daily dedicated listeners. So if you're interested in reaching that group, email me at matt_shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Well, what about Blake Griffin going forward? How does his game and his contract age? We'll get into that a little bit later, but first up, how good is Blake Griffin now? It's a question that came up about the trade in January when Tom Gores and the Pistons wanted their superstar. Well, now they feel like they got him. But after all the injuries, all the seasons of playing around 60 games a year, these last few including one season of 35 games, how much of those injuries taken a toll? Well, the counting numbers were still there until he was traded to Detroit, actually. His 23.6 points per game average in LA at the beginning of the 2017-18 season was the second best of his career behind that aforementioned 2013-14 season. But my question today is Blake Griffin an all-star in the Eastern Conference? Remember, when they picked the teams between the captains without regard to conference, you still are selected to the all-star team based on your conference with 13 guys making it from each side. Now, with all the transactions that have happened this offseason, Kawhi Leonard takes one of the front court all-star spots for the Eastern Conference in all likelihood, while his trade-off of DeMar DeRozan leaving doesn't do Blake Griffin any favors in terms of opening up front court spots. So there's one gone. LeBron's gone, so maybe that cancels out Kawhi coming in. That's kind of helpful, kind of a wash when you got those two coming and going. But then you throw Gordon Hayward into the mix. He'll be back for Boston this year, but you figure that he factors into the all-star debate somehow. And guys like Giannis and Joel Embiid, if those guys are healthy, they'll make it for sure as well. However, Kristaps Porzingis is a question mark, as we're not sure whether he'll start the season because of the ACL tear that he suffered. The relationship's being repaired between David Fizdale, the new Knicks regime, and Kristaps Porzingis, but who knows about that knee? This is obviously more important when talking about the All-Star game. It's almost like this conversation is back to where it started with Blake Griffin and Kevin Love. Do you believe that Blake Griffin can beat out Kevin Love? Because that's basically what it is. And even to go deeper than that, do you believe that the Pistons will have a better record than the Cleveland Cavaliers come that time to suggest that maybe their player deserves consideration ahead of the top player on the Cleveland Cavaliers? And then you take into consideration Andre Drummond. What does a full season of Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond playing together do for both of their all-star candidacies? Is this a situation where, yeah, the Pistons are a pretty good team, but they don't have a clear-cut top guy on their team, so maybe a guy like Kevin Love gets in ahead of Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, even though his team might not be as good in the standings as the Detroit Pistons, but he's the clear-cut number one player on that team. So maybe it could, those guys working together and playing together could cancel out some votes. So remains to be seen. Obviously, it depends on how those guys play, how the health of Blake Griffin kind of stays going forward. My guy Brishan out in Philadelphia, he had a take here on the Love Griffin debate on Twitter tonight. He says, Blake and Love are very comparable. Blake got a contender built around him in Los Angeles, and Love got traded into a new contender. That's the only difference. Also, you have two coaches who were overshadowed by LeBron in opposite ways, Detroit rising and Cleveland falling. End quote. His reference there, obviously, that Dwayne Casey with his playoff foibles beat out by LeBron James, while Tyronn Lue, still the coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, was, despite all the success he had, despite the great record he has as a head coach in the NBA, obviously everyone kind of gives that credit to LeBron James. So how good of a player is Blake Griffin right now? It kind of ties into what we're going to be talking about next in terms of what kind of things he's doing to develop his game and what kind of things Dwayne Casey does with his new top star that he says he wants to run things for his team offensively. So what about Blake Griffin going forward? How does his game and his contract age? We'll talk about that next year on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Headed to the opening of Lions training camp on Thursday. Excited to get to Allen Park and check that one out with the Detroit News. And by the way, if you are not listening to the Locked On Lions podcast with Matt Derry of Detroit Radio, a daily look at the Leos, I don't know what to tell you about that at this point. But I'd be remiss on doing an NBA podcast today without mentioning the Twitter fireworks from CJ McCollum going in on Kevin Durant. A long story on the exchange of how it happened, and I'm really not quite exactly sure how it all sparked up. But CJ McCollum says, I quote on Twitter, "I still think the B word is harsh and shouldn't be used. He know that decision was soft, but I respect it. It's like getting jumped with your brothers by a gang you should have beat, then joining the gang that jumped you and your brothers 2 months later and forgetting about your bros." That's just the statement that we've all kind of thought, or myself anyway, has thought of about Kevin Durant joining the Warriors. And nice to see NBA players also feel that way as well. But moving on to the Kevin Love debate along with Blake Griffin. What's Blake Griffin's future look like with the Detroit Pistons? Obviously, with him, health is the most important part. But I think Griffin kind of morphs into a nice old man in the NBA without the explosiveness that he had early on his career. I still have to put my negative hat on and say that I find it hard to see how you unleash Blake as the facilitator of everything, which is what Dwayne Casey has said he wants coming into this season, and then trying to get what you want out of Andre Drummond going forward, which is hopefully more than just an elite rim runner and a great rebounder as well. You know, maybe trying to get Dre to do some of the things that he was doing at the start of last season with Stan Van Gundy, sticking him in the high post and creating and running offense off of him in terms of dribble handoffs and other looks as well. Griffin shot 34.5% from three last year. I really hope he doesn't fall in love with it unless it becomes more consistent, something that you earn. Blake throughout his season averaged 5.6 attempts per game from three-point land, which is high, tied for 43rd in the league. So, higher than it should be when you consider that 49 guys had that many attempts per game or higher when talking about the rounding up or rounding down to 5.6 attempts per game. And of those 49 guys that have 5.6 attempts rounded off or higher, Griffin's three-point percentage was ranked 41st out of those guys. So 41st out of 49. So not good enough there to warrant being in the top 50 in three-point attempts. Now, as far as Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin, maybe there is a way to make it work, or maybe a trade of Andre Drummond can still happen down the road, or of course Blake Griffin could be traded as well, probably less likely given the amount of dollars on that contract in terms of getting a good return for him down the road. But a lot of variables, and the biggest one, like we said, being the health of Blake Griffin. The second one probably the evolution of his three-point shooting and then how he coexists with Andre Drummond and how the organization sees that going forward. An interesting year coming up for Blake Griffin, the best player on the Detroit Pistons and the one that's going to be needing to lead them if they're going to get back to the Eastern Conference playoffs and maybe even make a little noise come next spring. But give us a follow on Twitter. Let me know what you think at @Matt_Schoch, @SchoCh, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And give us a like on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-MattSchoch. So thanks for joining us, everyone, here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Schoch, and enjoy the rest of your week.